Hello and happy Tuesday, my friends. This is Danielle Carter, and I'd like to welcome you back to another informative episode of Cisco Champion Radio, where we provide insights and visibility into products and solutions across the Cisco portfolio and trending topics across our industry. If you like our podcast, please follow us and feel free to share your favorite episodes with your colleagues and friends. If you have thoughts or comments on what we should cover in a future episode, let us know. Talk with us on Twitter at Cisco Champion. All right, so the last time we spoke about wireless, the 9163E was just released. Since then, we've seen approval of AFC and Cisco has been certified for standard power across its 6E portfolio. We have our champions and experts here to dive deep into the conversation, so let's get started with introductions. From our champions, Mike, let's start with you. Who are you and what is it that you do?
Hey, Danielle, thanks for having me. My name's Mike Bolitho. I am a wireless engineer for a large healthcare system here in the United States.
Thank you for joining us. All right, Zahid, tell us who you are and what it is that you do.
Hi, my name is Zahid Muhammad. I have CCDs, CCIE certifications, and I'm the network architect and one of the organizations, Smart Solution Stars.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on this episode. To our guests, we have Jim, Roberto, and Sam. In no particular order, can you tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is that you do?
Hello, my name is Roberto Mucifora. I'm based in Switzerland. I've been with Cisco for the last 15 years, and I've been working on many different areas in the last 15 years, from routers to enterprise switches, and finally in the last 8 to 9 years in wireless. In particular, I've been working on the AFC solution for the last couple of years, so that's why I'm here, and hopefully I can help with your questions.
Thank you so much for joining us.
I'm Jim Florwick. I'm a principal technical marketing engineer with Cisco. I've been part of Cisco Wireless for the last 18 years or so, and I came to Cisco from Cognio, and I've just kind of stayed at the physical layer since then. So it's exciting days in our technology.
And hi, I'm Sam McMullen. I'm Chief Spectrum Architect at Federated Wireless. I'm leading the development of our AFC system. I've worked pretty closely with engineering, with Cisco's engineering and product team the last few years. And we just launched our AFC last month, and happy to support Cisco's launch as well last month, and thrilled to be part of this exciting discussion today. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. I think this is the first time that we've had three guests, so this should be quite the conversation. And I'll just kick it over to Mike.
All right, so why don't we do a little level set here? Not all of our listeners probably understand what AFC is or why we need it. So maybe one of you guys can go ahead and talk a little bit about that.
Sam?
Sure. So the 6 gigahertz band in the US and other parts around the world have incumbent systems that require protection from other devices sharing the band. So in the US, the FCC has made available 850 megahertz for standard power Wi-Fi 6E devices in indoor and outdoor use cases, as long as the incumbent systems are protected from interference from these Wi-Fi devices. So the way that all works is the AFC maintains a database of incumbents that it updates every day after syncing with the FCC. And as such, devices that want to access the band, they need to check in daily with the AFC to determine permissible power levels on each of the 6 gigahertz frequencies at their location. Determination is made such that the incumbents aren't interfered with. And the AFC will then tell a device what's available, but it's then up to the device to, or its controller to decide what channel to use. So that was real quick, but hopefully that helps.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think the 6 gigahertz, all that spectrum that we got has been incredible for us, as wireless engineers who are out there trying to plan and use up space effectively. And there was this corner that we still couldn't quite, hit yet. And that was, primarily like outdoor. So yeah, maybe Jim, you could talk a little bit about how this is gonna kind of complete that whole 6 gigahertz use case for us.
Well, so given the AFC's ability to tell me where it's safe to operate, right, so that we're not interfering with the incumbents, that gives us the ability then to plan appropriately around what is available for the outdoor frequencies and do it safely, right, and do it dynamically, right? So these things change over time, but it gives us the ability to cognitively assess what's available in real time and be able to use that information to coordinate outdoors. The reason that was important is because of signal propagation, right? We had low power indoor, which gave us enough power indoors, even though everybody thought that was probably light, when it turns out most of your internal spaces were operating at a lot lower power than everybody anticipated. And in reality, it works pretty good. Outdoor was the big bastion still, so there's no continuity from an indoor to outdoor network. And the antenna angles, which were kept out of low power specifically to control the gain and make it safe to operate indoors while we still have the incumbents. So those two things and having the ability to do it safely and understand where the interference may end up has made this possible. So I look forward to seeing it grow.
Yeah, thanks for that. Can you please explain that? What is the difference between the private 5G and 6E use case point of view, that why we need to use the 6E, why not the 5G?
I don't think you have to make a choice. I think it's what fits a given use case, right? 5G is the king of macro coverage, right? Outdoor coverage. But if I have a private network on campus, to extend that, if it's predominantly Wi-Fi today, a lot of the devices are transitioning to 6C already. It makes that easier for a provider that's primarily doing Wi-Fi today. Protected spaces and certain applications definitely can be better on 5G, but I think it's an individual deployment choice on what fits the model and the management style that you're doing today the best. Both technologies are extremely capable.
Okay, thanks. So how the 6E will leverage in a use case of the warehousing where the ceilings are very high and we need to use, and the scanner's point of view. So how 6E can help us on that part?
One of the interesting things with LPI, and I think it surprised a lot of my peers, surprised me as well. Mike, I don't know if you guys did any site surveying with 6 gigahertz, but your first thought is, well, I'll go to 160 megahertz, so I get 27 dBm, max that power out, and I should really be able to see 6 gigahertz go some places. And then you find out that you only get that power when you're using all 160 megahertz. LPI means your maximum 20 megahertz is 18 dBm. So the goal right now, at least what we've been trying to do, is match 5 and 6 gigahertz cell sizes. What that means is at 20 megahertz or my management channel, I'm only ever going to get to 18 dBm. So that defines my cell size, which becomes a problem in a higher ceiling or a longer distance proposal. So this allows us to make full power in 20 megahertz, which means the management frames can be heard, and it lets me cover much higher ceilings and outdoor areas and keep that 5 and 6 gigahertz coverage, that cell edge, consistent so that I can get good roaming performance and balance on the network. It's another piece of the puzzle.
That's basically what we've been doing, is trying to match those cell sizes with 6 and 5. Yeah. It makes the most sense, and we're going with 40 megahertz channels. And it is going to be nice though to this one piece we've really been missing is hitting the ambulance bays. When getting those first responder nets that we have out there, you know, when they come in and they got to communicate with the hospitals, and or when they're restocking and they need to do some charting or whatever it might be, being able to provide them coverage outdoors on the 6 gigahertz is definitely something we're very excited about, you know, starting to deploy. So that outdoor piece is a big deal. you know, a lot of other cities now are starting to become like smart cities and things like that. And why don't we talk a little bit about like where you guys have seen that kind of play out and how this extra spectrum outdoors is good?
Well, I mean, I can jump in with a couple of things that are active. And this is all spectrums involved. But smart cities are definitely a part of along with things like open roaming and things that we're doing today to make it possible. Not strictly in the US, where we launched open roaming was at a convention called Mobile World Congress many, many years ago. And I can still walk into that city at the airport, which is one owned network, transition to the city network, the venue, and all the way down to the vendor booths on the floor with private network and transition seamlessly across those. So it's definitely possible to stay connected consistently. Different cities have different logistics needs. So I think it's just more tools that we have to bring to it.
One more thing that, can you go through with the differences between the DFS and AFC?
Yeah, I can. DFS is intended to protect radar or radar-like signals. And the reaction time on that is extremely fast because it's health and safety related, right? For instance, if you fly in airplanes, you don't want the ground radar to be interfered with. And I remember back in the day seeing what 5 gigahertz looked like on one of those super, super sensitive radar scopes. And it's you can lose a whole airplane in there for sure. So that's been in place, and it was one of the first examples of cognitively sharing space because we had the detection and the ability to avoid it. AFC is kind of different in that there were licensed operators. It's not as critical health and safety, but to operate their businesses, they need to do that interference free. And it came about as a way to provide reasonable assurances to the existing users in the band that Wi-Fi wouldn't, you know, just become super prevalent and expand and take up all of their space and make it impossible for them to operate their businesses. So the good news is folks like Federated have been doing frequency coordination for many, many services for a number of years. And in the US, we had this fantastic database, given the FCC's resources of where all of those users were presently located. So AFC brings a capability to Wi-Fi that has existed in radio and coordination of radio for some time outside of Wi-Fi. This is just the first time that we're actually using that to coordinate outdoor and mitigate interference potential with existing users. So it's really using the spectrum, which was in transition, really, really well.
Do you guys, maybe this, Sam, this one maybe is for you. With outdoor, are you seeing more organizations do like a static channel plan for it? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, these incumbents, if someone does happen to get another piece of that spectrum, it's not like we're seeing incumbents like pop up on the in the area and then drop off and come over here and then off. So it seems like it's more static. Maybe you can kind of touch on that a little bit. Like, are we seeing APs moving around channels a lot, or what's that kind of looking like?
No, so if I didn't mention it, there are about 100,000 incumbents in the US in the database. And of course, we've been keeping track of that over the last 2-3 years. Only about 2,000 to 3,000 have changed over that entire duration. So it is very static. I mean, of course, you can't guarantee that. There may be some, you know, whole set of new ones that emerge in a given area. But by and large, we're seeing things pretty static. So, you know, you can plan a static channel plan. And that, I mean, we see most folks do that, given, you know, just the pretty static nature of the incumbent set.
It's probably in large dense areas where we would see more incumbents coming up, you know, in random fashion because of the nature of the landscape. But, you know, what I suggest in general is, it's probably better to always use, you know, a dynamic allocation of the channels, especially for AFC, because while it's true that in most of the cases, you know, the incumbents are always the same, At the same time, you don't want to find a situation where, let's say, from one day to another, because there is an incumbent that is popping up in the channel that you're using, that you're not able to use the channel anymore because you just selected the unfortunate channel where a new incumbent just arrived. So in general, as a rule of thumb, I would say that it's better to always have a dynamic allocation of the channel rather than doing a static allocation and keep it forever, right?
Okay, sure. So how does like RRM tie into that? They because RRM is done mostly on the controller, right? But now we're using Catalyst Center to do AFC, correct? Is that right?
No. So currently in the Catalyst architecture, what we have is access points. They typically communicate with the wireless controller, and the wireless controller manages the access point. Now, who is in charge of contacting the AFC is the wireless controller. So it is important that the wireless controller is able to reach the internet so that it can communicate with the AFC. The wireless controller is in charge of contacting the AFC every 24 hours or before the license expires. And once we get this information back, this is source of information for our RRM algorithm. So RRM will take care of excluding or reducing the power for those channels that have incumbents, have some incumbents. So that's how it works.
Okay, that's really good information because I was under the impression it was through Catalyst Center. So we got to make sure we got those holes in our firewall correct for our controller.
That's right.
So
yeah, that's correct.
Thanks for that one, Roberto. I'm putting that one away right here.
So, yeah, it works the same. By the way, that works the same on the Catalyst and the cloud-based stacks, right? It's all handled through proxy. Obviously, the cloud already has a connection, but on a controller-based network, you want to make sure you have port 443 opened up. And then it takes care of it itself. You don't even have to tell the controller to go find an AFC. It just does that.
So only the 443 is required for that. No other ports we need to open.
Nope.
There is actually, it's a 443 for the main communication, but because we also verify the certificates whenever we communicate. So security is important, right? So whenever we communicate with the external world, then there is a OSCP, which takes place, and OSCP is the process where we verify the certificates that are given by the FC provider. This typically runs over HTTP, so that's port 80.
Oh, right, so we need to open up the port 80 also.
I would suggest opening port 80 just for the OSCP provider, so for a given URL, not for all URLs, so that you reduce the phase of attack.
So these APs, they're locating via GPS, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, and so
actually we have multiple. It could be either through GPS or we also have something else called geolocation derivation. So they could derive geolocation from other access point, nearby access points.
Okay, and then so with the other access points that do have, I know you've got, some of the newer APs have GPS built in, correct? Is that okay?
The 9163E, the outdoor APs, typically the outdoor APs, they have embedded GPS, yes.
Okay. And so if you don't have embedded GPS, let's say it's like a 9136 that you've got like in a NEMA box underneath an overhang or something, that would
We provide a USB dongle that you can plug on the access point. That's correct. That's the one.
Okay.
So technically you can't put a 9163 in a NEMA box outdoors for SP coverage. That's one of those things we're still debating, is the use of outdoor enclosures. It's a sticking point.
That's interesting. Okay. Good to know.
Wow. Geolocation is important because the AFC uses that data to engineer a protection zone around the Wi-Fi to see where its potential impact could be. And that's what is used to base the calculations for frequencies, powers that we're going to be allowed to use at the location. So GPS built in on the outdoor APs, 9163. And future models will have the built-in GPS, not always. And the built-in GPS, I'll tell you something, the 9163, I was impressed because I lit that up in my basement And I moved it all the way to the center of the basement away from those teeny windows, and I was still getting a GPS signal in the center, which was impressive to me. But external antennas, all the models have them. The indoor models, we've got the USB dongle that can be ordered for the both the Catalyst and Meraki line of APs. That geolocation or geospatial design, everything that you want to run on SP has to have either a GPS or GNSS calculated location or a drive location. And the two ways that we're driving location over the air on the APs is through either NDP or neighbor messaging for both stacks. If I'm a first hop neighbor, and you want to be careful with that because it means indoor propagation has to be complete for location resolution. So you probably still want a couple of GPS units to anchor that. But the other way that you can anchor it is through the cabling system. So if I'm plugged into a single switch in both units, if my GPS anchor and another unit are plugged into the same switch, then we can safely assume that they're within 200 meters of each other. And that's going to be the highest penalty on a protection zone is that cable derivative. So if they can't hear each other directly over the air, then we have a larger area of uncertainty, which is technically can produce a less robust response from the AFC, meaning less channels and lower power because of more uncertainty.
Yeah, just note that is a big issue. You know, geolocation accuracy definitely comes into play for maximizing spectrum availability, because the AFC, it takes the uncertainty area that the device gives, and it has to compute basically worst case the availability over that whole uncertainty area when it provides spectrum availability. So, you know, the smaller the better in terms of maximizing that.
Yeah, that's actually pretty interesting bit to note. So there's like a sliding scale of like how accurate the location is, and then depending on that gives you different possible power.
Indeed. So, you know, I mean, within a building, you know, you're not going to see a whole lot of variation. But if your accuracy is only within a block, you know, you're definitely going to be degraded. And because of the way our propagation model works, you can run into some cases where part of your uncertainty area now is maybe over water, which gives you a very different spectrum availability answer. So, you know, the smaller, the better for sure for maximizing availability.
Well, that's really cool to know. Got another question for you guys. So, you know, obviously outdoor venues, maybe stadiums or, you know, concert venues, whatever have you, or some like, you know, just outdoor space at a college campus, something along those lines. So, I mean, I have an ID163E for Omnis. What other antennas are going to be available for the 9163E to use outdoors?
There's a 60-degree patch coming. Right now, that's it for the 9163E.
That's it for now. Okay.
Yeah. That's already available. Plus, there's the GPS antenna as well. It's external with the built-in GPS as well.
Yes, we have touched upon the geolocation. I have a question actually for you. Do you see any challenge to actually deploy the GNSS in the facilities you typically deploy your network? Because, you know, that is something that, let's say you already have a network, you would need to add GNSS to some of the access points. Those access points maybe won't have, GNSS fix because they are not close by, close to the window. So you would need to add an external antenna and run a cable so that you can reach the windows and like that. So do you see any challenge with that?
I mean, for us, we, you know, in a healthcare system, we go very high density, right? We have to ensure robust voice connectivity throughout the hospital we use. There's different vendors that have badges, you know, that for nurses to, you know, like a panic button or whatever, or they need to like hear about a code. So we have to have a very, very robust high density networks. We actually do have a lot of APs that are close to the windows and close to the walls, and so having to run a cable externally, that would be problematic, right? But from what I have heard and what I understand, the dongle that's close to the windows is probably going to be good enough for us, unless I'm mistaken. But I think that I don't see that as much of a challenge for us. We're deploying a lot of 9136s right now, and so with the USB and the dongle, I think that's shouldn't be for us an issue.
Have you seen the external antenna
for
There is a there
no,
is
no, a... not. Oh, yes, I have actually with the antenna on a cable.
Yeah,
I have.
Okay, yeah, that's a super sensitive antenna too. Yeah. So if you do run any troubles running around Windows, it gives you some pretty good reach.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, that's good.
Definitely.
10 meters anyway, which
is a lot.
Lot.
That's all for us. That's almost a cell size.
Yes.
You know, on one side. So, yeah.
Yeah, I remember when we had that question too. Well, if we do an external antenna, how long does it need to be? how long can I have?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm out of questions. Was there anything else that you guys wanted to speak to that we didn't really touch on?
The other thing that I was thinking about is there any reason people wouldn't want to enable everything on SP? And one of the common misconceptions is, you guys probably know this very well, everybody in wireless is like, more power, that's great. Sometimes that's the exact opposite of what I need, less power. But are there any downsides to enabling SP service? And the answer is, yeah, I mean, you have less spectrum, right? You're going to be limited to Uni 5 and Uni 6 now. But that's important to understand because you're going to get less channels.
Yeah, and I mean, that's like the biggest part about 6 gigahertz is all of the spectrum that we can use.
Right.
And like I was mentioning earlier, we go super high density, and in 5 gigahertz, we run into issues with co-channel contention. So this is a huge for us. So yeah, we wouldn't want to limit ourselves and split that spectrum pretty much in half.
Well, I think, yeah, the cautionary tale there is, and we came out, we enabled it in all of our internal APs, and everybody immediately came out and said, why wouldn't I want all my internal APs to be full power all the time? Because, well, you're an engineer, so you look at your network, and you're like, well, it's running at about 10 dBm now. What if you go to 24 dBm in the middle of a room, you're going to have every client within a block. So it's just a watchword. You have to, it's situational. It's not something that you flip on because it's always better all the time. It's a design tool. Did that sound like your father's lecture? Because what I see is Jim getting called and it's like, well, turn off SP. Oh, look, it's magically better. Yay. Right. You know, so it's counterintuitive sometimes what's good for us and what's not. But yeah, let's ask that question about, you know, if there's any downside to it, because I think it's important to mention that we are restricted to two of the unis. So there's some things to consider if you're going to deploy it. Not that it's hard, but some things.
Wow. So our listeners, if you want to continue your learning on today's topic, you can check out the resources provided in the show notes below. And this is your weekly reminder. You can subscribe to Cisco Champion Radio on your favorite streaming platform and receive alerts on our latest releases. So wherever you're listening to us, make sure to click on that subscribe or follow button now. Thank you for listening in, and see you again next time.